Tom Meredith.
Well, good morning. It is 8:17, Galesburg Live. Thanks for being with us on this July 15th. Our guest this hour, have him on a couple of times a year because we want to talk about keeping your car up and running and on the road, what you can do to keep it, and we talk winter car maintenance, but not now because it's hot, so we're talking summer car maintenance. He is the fleet supervisor for the city of Galesburg, Myron Miller. Myron, good morning. How are you today?
I'm fine, Tom, and you?
I am very good. Glad you were able to get here this morning since the host forgot to give you a reminder call yesterday.
Well, you know, it's a shame that I should have to be that way. It's hilarious because it was only at 7:15 this morning. Hey, I think I'm supposed to be on the radio.
And for me, it was 9 o'clock last night. I'm like, oh, I didn't call Myron. So I need somebody to remind me to remind you.
Yeah, but it all worked out. We're here together.
It did. So. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming in. So Myron, the fleet supervisor for the city of Galesburg, what does that mean? Well, that means maintenance on anything with a motor or engine. You and your department take care of for the city of Galesburg.
We do, and that represents approximately 188 pieces of equipment total, about 118 licensed vehicles, mm-hmm. Police, fire, street, you know, public works, airport, parks, and we do all of that. So it keeps us busy.
Man, there was a question that came up earlier in the week, and I said, oh, I have to ask Myron that. And now I don't remember. Something to do with squad cars, I think, and... Boy, what was it? Oh, man, maybe if Nick's around, maybe he can remember. It was off the air. We got talking about something like, oh, Myron could probably answer that. Now I have no idea what it was. And we might have even discussed it on the air. And now, it's too many days ago. I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday morning.
Right, so. Absolutely. So, all right. Well, summertime, sometimes different needs. I mean, I guess cars are getting so advanced and complicated. Is there... in this day and age, a lot of difference between what you need to do to maintain in the summer as opposed to winter and the cold weather?
Well, that poses a good question. I think that it is less than it used to be. But when you really look at the basics, there are still some very important things that need to be done. Probably the biggest thing is tire pressure. 20 years ago, a tire pressure monitor system really hadn't, if it had been thought of, at least it wasn't offered to the public. And that's all really come to be in the last 15 years. And so that makes it easier because people so often, I noticed on my way to work that there's a car that I drive by that is consistently, the tires look a little bit low. And it's not something we think about if it's not flat. And some tires, especially with the lower profile tires that are on some of the cars now, you wouldn't know if they looked really flat or if they were at least low. And so you could potentially run a tire 6-7 pounds low on tire pressure, and it ruins the life of the tire. Shortens it. It ruins your fuel economy. It can affect handling. It can definitely affect handling when it's hot. And so the tire pressure monitors have kind of, have changed that because they obviously come on this amber warning telling you that you have a tire low. But also I think that there are a few people that, as time goes by, become somewhat impervious to that. The tire light's on, they walk around the car, hey, they all look up to me, it's just a false reading, or it'll go away and if I ignore it long enough. And the reality it is, no, you need to check your tire pressure. So in the wintertime, Tom, you and I talk about tire pressure shrinking, cold air shrinks, contracts, and it expands in the summer. So more often than not, what we tend to do is check the tire pressure when the tires are hot. Well, that air may have expanded, and it may be closer to what it should be. The best time to check your tire pressure is before you've moved the car for the day. And I would strongly encourage people to do that. So that's a long answer to your short question, but that's probably one. And then we're going to come back to the same thing we talk about every time that I'll never give up on, wiper inserts.
Right.
Keeping your wiper inserts clean. And I think you have at least one time, at least you told me you did.
Yes.
Wiped them clean.
It was at least one. It may have been another. And I need to do it again because of, you know, and summer, it's even more pertinent
because
of the bugs.
You bet.
So I know right now because this morning going out and the moisture from the humidity on my windshield this morning is like,
yep.
I really need to clean them because I've had so many bugs and everything on there.
And it just, I can't encourage that enough because when you need your wipers the worst is when you find out how bad they are or could be. So we talk about things, batteries. We've talked about that. That's changed some. I read an article the other day that Volvo said that they anticipate by 2020 not making a straight gas engine. So we're going to see more and more of the hybrid technology come and go. So that changes the course a little bit. Now we have cars, the hybrid cars, that don't even have a power steering pump with a belt. Some of them are running no belt on the AC compressor. They're doing it all by way of electric activated motors. And so things have definitely changed.
My son would have loved that a couple of weeks ago. His power steering pump just pretty much exploded, fell apart. So, yeah. So, of course, the belt was gone too.
But. Absolutely. It just takes the belt right out.
Yep.
So those kind of things change. But when you look at it actually just in terms of operation of the vehicle, yes, it has become less easier for the curbside mechanic to look at his own car and know everything. You can still check the engine oil. That's not going to change anytime soon. But things like power steering fluid, that, you know, you don't, some of that transmission fluid. The squad cars, for example, there's no transmission dipstick because they've gone to this world standard fluid. Transmission fluid in the olden days, what you and I would call that, it was fluid that should have been changed every 30,000 miles. That's changed now. Maintenance intervals stretched out to 100 or 150,000.
As of, like, what year vehicle, for instance?
Oh, gosh, I would think that there were some that probably had it as early as 2003, 2004. Okay. But more pronounced, if I had to guess, Tom, that's an excellent question, by the way. I would say within the last 6 to 7 years.
Okay.
It's probably the most critical that you'll start to see transmission fluid dipsticks start to disappear. So I would say since 2010, there are more that have no transmission dipstick now than there are that do.
I'll be completely honest. I didn't know there was one. I'm sure I had a car that had it, and I don't know if my current one does. I don't think it's a 2010, so I'm guessing
it,
not.
But, it may not, no.
But I didn't. And where would it – is it – normally located in a particular area?
Well, it can vary from vehicle, but it was always toward the back of the engine compartment. Okay. And usually speaking, your dipstick cover is yellow and your transmission dipstick is orange.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of a standard. It's not guaranteed, but it's kind of standard. So you could look at that and know. But there again, checking transmission fluid is just different than it used to be. Transmissions don't seep like they used to. Seals are made better. Cases are made better. So we come that long circle around to saying, wiper blades, get to the gas station when you're pumping gas, take the old scrubber thing, and not only clean your windshield, but clean the bottom of your windshield wiper blade, get it wet with the sponge, and then just take a paper towel and wipe down it, and you will be absolutely amazed at how much black stuff there is on the napkin, you know.
Yeah.
And that is the stuff that causes the smear across your windshield. You can clean your windshield well, but your wiper, if it's dirty, it's not going to clean well.
Yeah, and a prime example, like I said this morning, the first thing I did is like, okay, I know it's going to streak, so I'll hit the washer fluid first. Didn't matter. It's because I know my wipers are that dirty because I've had so many bugs from driving this summer and have not, so that's the, and again, you said, it's the water, like you said, at the gas station using the washer fluid and that, or if you're doing it at home, paper towel and water, any kind of soap, or just with water. I mean, because no cleaning products, though.
No cleaning products.
No Armor All or anything
like
that.
No.
Yeah.
But, even just water and just a little bit of mild dish soap.
Okay.
And the other thing, too, is that I don't know that we've talked about before, but if your car has green valve stem caps on it, that's nitrogen. So the ideal situation is not to mix oxygen and nitrogen. So if you have nitrogen-filled tires, you should keep it that way. The idea behind nitrogen is that rubber is porous, and it is less likely to escape through the pores of the rubber than just regular outside air. And so it will keep the tires inflated at the accurate pressure for a longer period of time. Now, the downside to that is that you have to find a place that has a nitrogen charger. So not every independent repair shop, definitely gas stations, don't have that yet. By and large, it hasn't happened.
Right.
But I always encourage people, there's any one of 10 different places in this town that you can stop by and say to the mechanic, would you just check my tire pressure? And I've never known a mechanic yet, male or female, that ever looked at somebody and said, no. Mm-hmm. They'll always do it. They'll always, it doesn't matter who it is in the city of Galesburg, they'll always accommodate you if you just stop by and say, can you check my tire pressure? And they'll, air's free.
Right.
And so it's an easy thing to do.
Some places.
Yeah. Yes.
They're now, that is changing.
Yes.
Well, I wanted to ask you, though, there's one place I go, and it is still free, and there's a new pump at a particular gas station. Some of them have this now. It's actually digital, and you set what your pressure is supposed to be, which, then, as you've told us, don't judge by what's on the tire. Judge by what's on your door jam.
Yes.
And mine's 35 pounds. So I'll go and put it on 35 pounds, and it automatically stops. Do you know how accurate? I'm assuming it's
pretty
accurate.
Darn.
Okay.
It is. It's pretty darn accurate because it's basically looking at pressure. It may vary by, you know, maybe even as high as a pound, although I would doubt it. Those are when you're dealing with pressure, if you have a sensor that's working correctly at all, it'll stop at 35. So I would say it's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
You can depend on that.
Well, and you mentioned that, you know, you just walk around, okay, low pressure lights on, you walk around, you look, I don't see anything. I've had on one that I had for a while a very, very slow leak in it. It was worse during the winter, obviously. But looking at it, I always knew which tire it was. I had figured it out. But looking at it, there were sometimes I couldn't tell, but it would be, you know, as I said, it's supposed to be 35. There were times it was down like 22, 24 pounds, and I still couldn't really tell.
Yep, and that's what happens with a lot of low-profile tires. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, I would say that low-profile tires probably account for, I don't know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 25% of cars produced now. I don't know that I have accurate information about that, but that's got to be pretty close. There's a lot of them made now, and they just have such a stiff sidewall that they don't show it, and yet you're still causing premature tire failure and loss of performance of your car and handling.
Absolutely. I'll talk more about that, some of the summer things. Oil is another one, and you know, one of the other things that having to do with tires when you get your oil change, that I know Myron suggests that that you do when you get your oil change, is the rotation.
The tire rotation. Yeah. And that, you know, and that's particularly important this time of year. We talk about it in the wintertime, and I, you know, there are people, and you and I've talked about this, there's people at each end of the spectrum. You keep your best tires to the front, you keep your best tires to the rear, and it can depend on your particular situation. If it's a pickup, it's different than a car, but every car virtually made now is front-wheel drive or all-wheel drive, and so you always want your best tires to the front, but doing that can shorten the life on your tires in the rear, because all they basically do is hold up the rear of the vehicle. And so they tend to do what we call checking or chopping. And so eventually you'll hear this sound. And it comes on so subtle that it becomes louder and you become innocuous to it because you're used to hearing it. I was talking to a man the other day that had a bad wheel bearing in his sport utility vehicle. And he had just kind of ignored it for quite a period of time, and it got louder and louder. So he had both of the front wheel bearings, which on that particular vehicle were a hub bearing assembly, had them replaced, and got back and took it for a drive, and he didn't even know what to think. That noise had become so loud over time, and he had just become used to it. And then he went back, and it was quiet like it was when the day it was made. Well, the same thing happens with tires. So by keeping your tires rotated every 5,000 miles, you will get maximum life out of your tires, and you'll also get maximum performance. It just works best both ways.
Myron Miller joining us here this morning. He's fleet supervisor for the city of Galesburg. As we will take a break here, we'll come back and we'll have some news for you. Come back and talk more with Myron. Take your calls as well on summer car maintenance. This is Galesburg Live. Thanks for joining us this morning, Galesburg Live. Our guest this morning, Myron Miller. He is a fleet supervisor for the city of Galesburg. His department maintains every single vehicle here from, a weed whacker lawnmower all the way up to the biggest fire truck and snow plows and all that. And
everything in between.
Everything in between. But I'm driving me crazy trying to think. There was something that came up that I was going to ask you about. It had something to do with police cars. And I don't know what it was.
You'll think about it 5 minutes after I leave.
Or like 9 o'clock tonight, like when I thought about the fact I didn't call you. So we're talking about summer car maintenance here this morning. And you know, it's really interesting in a day and age that so much has changed. I don't know what technology wise with cars. There's been different levels of it, but, you know, biggest change time period, has it been like since the year 2000, since 2010, since the mid-2000s, or is it going back
82.
To like mid, really, that's the biggest, biggest change.
Yeah, 82. Okay. There's kind of two benchmarks that you can look at, and the first one was emissions in 73, when you first saw emissions come on cars. And if you remember, I think it was 74 that there was the big oil shortage.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you saw some of your iconic muscle cars disappear.
Right, and all the
severely detuned. Yes. Mm-hmm. Second one is 82 was the advent of the first ECM. And, you know, at that point, EPA restrictions were starting to tighten a lot more. That gained tempo and speed all the way through the late 70s. So 82, I think, and I may be wrong by year, maybe 81, but 81 or 82, you saw your first ECUs, your first computers. Very basic, very primitive, but the first time that you would see that. By 1985, there were cars being introduced, like the Olds 98, for example, had gone from a V8 down to a V6. They started the advent of cam sensors, crank sensors, mass airflow sensors, MAP sensors, which is manifold absolute pressure. You saw those things start to develop. And then through years, then you saw more aluminum used in an engine than there used to be. Oxygen sensors, catalytic converters started to evolve and become much more than they had been. And then you move into probably the single biggest thing to really shake the world was the hybrid vehicle. And now a hybrid vehicle is much probably about the norm, and it's not as much the exception. And that's taken different forms over time, but it still comes back to the same basic thing. It's a lithium-ion battery incorporated into the powertrain of the vehicle. So there's totally electric vehicles. We don't see that a lot around here. You see it much more in large metro areas where they actually are just driving across town, but they might be stuck in traffic for half an hour at a time. And of course, different cities are making plug-in parks, you know, right, where you can go and plug your vehicle in.
Right.
I believe that the next big thing that we will see will be stabilization of nitrogen-powered vehicles. Hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's the next big thing. And because hydrogen basically is based on water, and water is the most plentiful of anything on the earth. So I believe that there'll come a point in time when hydrogen will become mainstream. Do I think it will? Originally, I used to voice the opinion that I thought that it would be by 2020. I think it's probably going to be delayed some because there's been such giant leaps in the hybrid vehicles, the electric vehicles, the lithium ion. But, you know, when you look at it, Tom, and I don't mean to wax philosophical here, I really don't, but when you look at it, we talk about oil and how much, you know, what it does to the ozone layer and all of those things. But when you look at lithium ion, there's only so much of it available also. So I think, you know, if the world's still around in 200 years, neither one would have any idea what transportation would look like.
Right.
But there'll always be an evolution. But for now, at least for everybody in the city of Galesburg, there are some basic things that you and I talk about, and I don't want to ever sound like a broken record here, but these are the things that involve the everyday person that goes out the door, gets in their car, and we talk about batteries, and we talk about them in the fall. But you and I have had this discussion a year ago, and that was batteries actually fail more often in the summer than they do in the winter. Vehicles now are so well precision made, everything is fuel injected, that you don't have to have a choke. There's no automatic choke, so cars start almost immediately, regardless of whether it's cold. But the heat actually affects batteries, and you know, all of the starting batteries that there still are still a lead-based battery. We, within the city garage this last week, have replaced two batteries on vehicles that it's not cold. And the batteries weren't all that old. They were probably 4 or 5 years old. Mm. But they were in a position in the vehicle to be under a lot of heat conditions. They've shrunk vehicles. Everything is compacted. Let's face it. You look under the hood of the car now. Do you see anything that you could possibly work on? Not a chance.
I don't see anything I recognize.
No, it's just this mass of things. Well,
yeah.
Tucked somewhere in there is the battery, and it's hot. And so I encourage people, get your batteries tested, because when do batteries quit? When you don't want them to quit.
Well, is there any sign other than when you get the is there any other sign that, yes, that might be going?
Yes, there is. The thing that you want to check, that when the battery, that, and that's a misnomer, by the way. People that see the battery light come on, the warning light, say, well, my battery must be bad. No, that's not the truth. That means almost always that your alternator is bad.
Okay.
Now, the alternator gives you that warning sign. And so it's a red light, so that means cease and desist. But with the batteries, yeah, there are maybe a couple of other signs, but primarily it'll happen whenever you go to turn it over and it's,
right,
and it's done. Mm-hmm. And it's because of the way that a battery is constructed. It has active material on active plates that are vertical inside of a battery. And across the bottom, it's an open area, and they call that the sediment space. And that active material is falling off of the battery plates from the life of its, from when it's first built. And every battery, regardless of when it's made, has so many life cycles bred into it. And so as that active material falls off, it fills that sediment space. And when it finally fills that space across the bottom and shorts across the plates, that's what causes a battery to fail, by and large. Now, there are other things, too. The vertical plates can crack, those kinds of things. Batteries can go dry. But you don't see batteries going dry like you used to, because everything is maintenance-free. It's almost impossible to add distilled water to them. That's why I encourage, and the equipment that we use to test batteries can almost predict the future. So we can have a car starting fine and be only half or less than half of its cold cranking amp ability, and we know at that point we need to pull it out. Vehicle's still starting fine, but we test it with a tester that shows us what the ambient temperature is, what the temperature inside of it is, and it knows it's not producing what it used to produce.
And you, again, to get your battery tested, any of the shops, and even some of the stores, the car part stores will do that for you, too.
Absolutely. And the other thing, too, we've talked about this before. I don't know if it's been maybe a couple of years. What to do about the warning lights. So anything that's red means pull over and get your cell phone out and call for help. If it's amber, don't ignore it, but you can keep operational. Check engine light, for example. Two different methods of that. If the check engine light is flashing, most normally, you'll be feeling the car running poorly at that point, because that's what's known as an active code. If the check engine light is on, amber, just solid, that means that it has stored a code. And most likely, when a place like an auto parts store that can come out and hook into the data link connector, they'll find that it's a history code, but it has made diagnosing the emission system, which is very complex. It's not just a simple system, easier for the technician because it sets a code and they can restore that code. So if your check engine light comes on, you can continue to drive it. If your tire pressure monitor light comes on and you get out and walk around the car and the tires are still up, you can at least continue to drive it until you get off the interstate or get home or get to the service station. When you see a red light, stop, because something bad is happening.
All right. Myron Miller, Fleet Supervisor for the City of Galesburg, joining us this morning. We'll talk more, take your calls as well if you have questions about your car, summer car maintenance, or I guess your other engines as well. We'll talk more about that. It is 8:47. This is Galesburg Live. Myron Miller, our guest this morning, Fleet Supervisor for the City of Galesburg. We're talking summer car maintenance, keeping you safe and running on the road. And I have to thank a caller so much. She was so nice. I think it was actually just yesterday we were talking about the question that I had, that it had nothing to do with vehicle maintenance, but the city of Pekin had a couple of motorcycle patrol officers, a couple of motorcycles, and the lease was up on it, and due to funding they said, nope, we're not doing that anymore. Here in Galesburg, we had both mentioned that we had not seen anybody out there as far as the police on their motorcycle patrol, and I have in the past, and I was saying, not to say that they're not out there and still doing it and still have them, and I thought, oh, Myron will be able to answer that. So the fact is, I apparently just haven't seen anybody out on them.
You know, and it's interesting, and I can't speak for this. I don't work with the police or work for the police department, so I'm going to go out on a limb here, and if there are any police officers listening, I'll hear about it. But it has a lot of that has to do with the fact that they use computers in the police cars now. And there's so much information available to them at their fingertips when they make a stop or when they see a suspicious vehicle or if they see something. Information that they didn't have at their fingertips at the advent, you know, police motorcycles first came to Galesburg, I suppose back in the 30s or been a long time. So, yes, Galesburg still has two police motorcycles. They're primarily used at the 4th of July celebration and in parades. And it's not because they can't. It's because they choose not to because of the computers that are within the vehicle. And that's unofficial. So please do not take me to the wall on that. But that's the main reason.
That makes sense, though. Because same thing, because I would say every now and then you see with the state police as well. But again, you don't have... I mean, I suppose there is a way you could have some, you know, whether it's a tablet or something, but you don't have just the room on the bike itself to be safe and have that at your fingertips like you do with the car. Like
right. And I think the state police, and there again, I'm speaking totally unofficially, but let's face it, a policeman on a motorcycle is a stealth vehicle. Mm-hmm. You see so many different motorcycles that they and their motorcycles look pretty innocuous. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they use that when they're on a campaign to write tickets for somebody driving distracted or somebody driving with, you know, without their seatbelt or whatever. And again, that comes back to Galesburg has two motorcycles. Yeah. They're actually almost 20 years old and in very good condition.
Yeah.
But that's primarily what they're used for, parades and 4th of July.
Kawasaki's?
No, these are Harleys.
They are Harleys. Okay, I can't remember.
The Kawasaki's dated back to, I think, the 80s.
Okay.
And then they went to the Harleys in 2001.
Okay. So, but the city actually owns them.
They do.
Okay. As opposed to, because that was the thing in Pekin. They actually leased them, and the lease was up. So they like, we can't afford to do this anymore.
So, and they're neat looking bikes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They really are.
Absolutely. You know. All right. So thank you so much to our caller. She says, she's like saying, I know what it was. It's like, oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right. Myra Miller joining us this morning, fleet supervisor for the city of Galesburg. If you have a question, 342-9194, Myron will do his best to answer that for you. One of the things that always comes up when we talk about this, and again, probably not as pertinent as another time when oil was different, but it's like, okay, well, in the winter I put this grate in, and in the summer I put this grate in. Has that totally changed at this point?
It's totally changed.
Okay.
There is no more one grade in the, and we talked about this, I think, a couple of times ago, and about the viscosity of oil and the fact that most of the engines now are using at least a semi-synthetic oil base. Some are using a fully synthetic 0W20, 5W20, 5W30. And so the days of the 10W30 are basically gone except for diesel engines,
right.
Those are 1540.
All right. Well, let's take a call here this morning. Hi, you're on WGIO. Who's calling? You have a question for Myron.
This is Dee May. I want to find out about air conditioners in a car. I'm told it uses more of your gas. I've told it doesn't, and I thought you would know.
Yes, it probably does affect it, but it affects it very minutely, and that's an excellent question. In the days dating back in the 60s and 70s and into the early 80s, AC compressors lost a lot of their efficiency because they were large. It took a lot more effort to move the Freon through the AC system. As time has gone by, AC compressors are like everything else on your vehicle, and that is that they have become more efficient. So the reality is this. You won't ever, at the end of the year, see a reduced efficiency in your engine. You will not see any difference in your fuel economy that you can measure by using your air conditioner. Let me tell you something that I do in my truck. I never shut my air conditioner off all year long. My air conditioner remains on in the winter and in the summer. And the reason that I do that is because, believe it or not, you can have your air on in the middle of the winter, still turn your heat up, and it'll get just as hot if you shut your air conditioner off. I do that because an air conditioner is a dehumidifier first and foremost. So you're always taking that moisture on the inside of your vehicle away. So the long answer to your short question, leave your air conditioner on almost all of the time year-round. Control your temperature with your hot and cold button, and you'll be fine. And it won't cost you. I would be willing to venture a safe guess would be, at the very most, it might cost you $10 more in a year's time to have the air conditioner on all the time.
Well, thank you very, very much.
You're very welcome.
Dee, thanks so much for your call this morning.
Both of you.
All right. Thanks so much, Dee. Appreciate it. Have a great day. Yeah, that's a great question. That's one I've always wondered that, too, because I've heard both. But I, and you know, that I'm glad you said that too about keeping it on in the winter, because sometimes when I needed to defrost, I would still even put it on cold because I thought I had to have it on cold to defrost, because I knew that, yeah, it's like a dehumidifier, but now I'm okay. Mine's staying on for the rest of its life.
I never shut my air conditioner off all year long.
Let's go back to the phones. Hi, you're on WGIO. What's your name?
Rose.
Rose, you have a question for Myron?
Yeah, I do. But go ahead. First, I want to thank him for the information. It's been very helpful to me.
Absolutely.
As a single lady. This past winter, I put some just regular air in my tires, which had been filled with nitrogen. So now I'm wondering, what harm will that do to that tire, and what should I do to...
It will do no harm. That's the first thing. It will do no harm, but long range. But here's what I would do if I were you. I would go to a vehicle that or to a repair facility or a service station that has... nitrogen capability, and I would ask them to deflate the tires to at least half of their capacity. So if it was 35, I'd have them drop it down to, say, 16 or 17 pounds, and then recharge it with nitrogen. They don't have to deflate it completely, but just discharge it down to about half capacity, and then recharge it with the nitrogen, and you'll be just fine. They don't want you doing that because it offers more of a variation in the fluctuation of the tire pressure, and they don't want that to happen. Nothing, it's not going to blow up the tire. It's not going to shorten the life of the tire, at least from what I know and understand. You can intermix them. It's not advised, but there's no long range or there's no short range adverse effects. So I would just go to some place that has a nitrogen charging. Ask their advice, first of all, but I would recommend just having them deflate them down to half of their rated capacity, and then recharge it with the nitrogen, and 5 years from now, you'll never know that it happened.
All righty. Thank you very much. I appreciate the information.
Okay, thanks so Rose. Much for your call this morning, Rose. Have a great day. All right.
You
well, thank you. Well, Myron, time goes too fast.
It does.
Yeah. So you got to be able to see. You got to be able to steer. You got to be able to stop.
I've taught you well.
You have taught me
you
well.
You the man.
Myron, thanks so much as always. Appreciate it.
It's my delight to be here. Be safe.